Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom, welcome back to today's Daf, which is Erev and Pei Beis. We are two lines from the top. It says the Gemara Gufa, we just learned Omar Rabbi Shob ben Levi. Kol Mokim Omar Rabbi Yehuda, E Masai Ubameh, the Mishnah Seinu. Whenever you will find Rabbi Yehuda using these words in our Mishnah, E Masai, when, Ubameh, in what? So we have a Tanakama's view, and the Rabbi Yehuda responds by saying, when does that apply? In what case does it apply? So whenever he employs these words in our Mishnah, Einai Ela Lefarish Divrei Chachamim, he's merely coming to expound on the words of Chachamim. There's no dissenting view here. It's agreed upon by all. So that's the Shita of Rabbi Shimon Levi. Eimasai Ubameh denote Pirush, not dissent. Rabbi Yechon Amar Eimasai Lefarish. Indeed, the word Eimasai is merely coming to explain. However, Ubameh, that's different. That is Lachlik. When he uses the word Bameh, Bameh Dvar Mamurim, then he's coming to disagree with the Tanakam. Says the Gemara, but all agree v'emasai lefarishu? That Rabbi Yehuda uses the word emasai is merely come to explain, but not, but we have a Mishnah which seems to indicate otherwise. Rabbi Yehuda uses the word emasai, but it's a dissenting view. The Mishnah says like this, ve'elu heina psulim. The following are pasul, to offer testimony, the pasul edus. We know that a person who is involved in Avera, he's a Rasha, is disqualified from providing edus. We have a list of four cases. Hamasachet b'kuvya, one who engages in gambling. Kuvya is this, some type of wooden coin or some type of dice. So this is gambling. Umava b'ribis, or he lends with interest, which is a iser. Umafrich yoinim, he engages in bird racing. This is another variety of gambling. Veserch yishvius, or those who engage in business activities using buying and selling perishvies, which is also it's meant to be eaten, not to be used as merchandise. So in the case of the ribis or the shvies, it's a straightaway iser. In the case of the gambling, it's not actually a straightaway iser because what's he doing wrong? So it would seem that the problem there is because the person who's giving away that money is not doing it willingly. when he puts down his money for the gamble, he's relying, it's an asmachta, he's relying on the chance that he himself will win. So when the person actually loses and the other fellow receives that money, he's taking something which isn't really rightfully his. So midrabbanan, it's called gezel. Because we're working with the concept of asmachta loikanya. That offering money on a chance with the mindset that, look, I'm going to hopefully win, that's called asmachta loikanya. The person is not kaina, meaning the person who takes that money, it's not really his, because it wasn't given willingly. So therefore, these two cases of the gamblers, Misachek Bekuvia and Mafricha Yoinim, involve, entail Issa the Rabbanon of Gzela. So you have two cases where it's an Issa Torah, Ribis and Shvius, and two cases which appear to be Issa Drabbanon of Gzela. So that's the Shita of the Tanakama. Rabbi Yehuda, regarding these gamblers, it's not really an Issa, it's not Gezel, because he holds that Asmachta Kanya. When a person offers money on a chance, he sets down money for the wager here, he's giving it away wholeheartedly. So when a person goes and takes that money, there's no gezel involved. It's not even gezel midrabbanan. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, when it comes to these gamblers, Eimasai, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Eimasai, when are these fellows pasul edus? Bezman she'ein lo umnos elehi, when he doesn't have another occupation. This is his sole occupation, this is his source of income. Aval yesh lo umnos elehi, but if he has another valid occupation, he has another job, hareiz kasha, then he's kasha. Why is that? Let's take a look at Rashi, 8 lines from the top. It says Rashi, Bizman she'ein lahem umnus elohim. Why is it contingent on having a regular job? The kasav Rabbi Yehuda asmachta, Rabbi Yehuda holds this type of dealing, this asmachta shu nismach al daite shu natschenu, because he relies on his the chance that he'll win, alois asmachta hu masna, based on that, he lays down this wager, he makes this tanai, kanya. It's considered to be a commitment, it's a true kinyan. And the person who takes that money is not a gazlan. V'lav gazlan and ninu. These people are not gazlanin. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, that's not the concern here. What then is the problem? Upsulayu. Their psula is because l'fisha ein asukin b'yishuvah shalaylam. They're not engaged in constructive activities. They don't have a legitimate occupation. The kivan she'ein makirin u'bekirin b'toyrach v'tzar b'nei adam. Since they're not really positive contributors to society, and they don't, they're not really familiar with your typical day-to-day struggles and efforts that your commoner experiences to earn a livelihood. So as a result of that, they're more inclined to perhaps accept a bribe to testify falsely, even at another person's expense. They don't have that sensitivity, that interpersonal sensitivity. Einon chasen al chavrein m'lafsid m'mamin. So perhaps they'll say false edus at a person's expense. So that's the problem. It's not due to the fact that asmachta is not koined and it's gezel, but rather due to his lack of sensitivity and civility. So here we have a Tanakama, who gives us a list, ribis, shvius, and gamblers, which are all possible. Rabbi Yehuda responds by saying, look, emosai. The gamblers are only possible due to their lack of sensitivity. So if they have another occupation, engaged in legitimate activity other than this, then they're okay. Continues the Gemara, v'tani lo b'braisa. And the braisa added to this halacha as follows. V'chachamim oimim, they disagree. They hold, bein she'en loy umnos elehi, whether he has no other occupation other than this, u'bein she'esh loy umnos shlohi, whether he actually has another legitimate job aside from this, harei ze posel. He's posel. Apparently, the Chachamim, which we presume to be Lishita of the Tanakhama in the earlier Mishnah, to who Rabbi Yehuda responded, but Amosai, that Shita disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda. The reason for the Psul is because of Gezel. So whether or not he has another legitimate job, he's possible because he's taking money unlawfully. So here we see Rabbi Yehuda responding with the word Amosai, but is really offering a dissenting view. Says the Gemara, no, Hahid Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rabbi Tarfani. That price with the Chachamim stated as a blanket statement. Any type of gambler is possible because he's a gazlan, is actually not the same shita that Rabbi Yehuda was responding to. That Tanakama agrees with Rabbi Yehuda. However, this shita is another shita of Rabbi Tarfani. The Sanya Amar Rabbi Yehuda Mishra Rabbi Tarfani. So review the quarter of Tafin as follows. If you have two people standing together, Reuven and Shimon, and they notice somebody else coming towards them. So Reuven says, look, if that person is an Azar, then I am an Azar. Shimon responds by saying, if that person is not an Azar, then I'll be an Azar. So chances are one of these two people are an Azar. Says Reuven Yudah, in the name of Tafin, no, none of them will be an Azar. Lo'ilam ein echad mehem Azar. None of them is an Azar. Why? Since it wasn't clear and conclusive at the time of utterance, it doesn't work. L'fisha'ein aziris ela la'afla needs to be uttered clearly. Alma apparently kiva de mesapkale, since he's unsure, he's doubtful, inazir iloy nazir, who, whether or not that person coming towards them is anazir, le'mishabed nafshay. So on account of percentages of chances, he doesn't commit himself. Hachanami here as well, when it comes to the gamblers, kiva de la'yada, since he's unsure, ikani, iloy ikani, whether or not he's going to win the gamble, he doesn't wholeheartedly give away the money. Therefore, when a person comes and takes that money from him, he's doing gezel with Rabbanon. So this sheet is Rav Tarfon. However, in the Mishnah, where Rav Yehuda is discussing the halacha with Tanakama, there's no dissenting view. Rav Yehuda is simply expounding on the Tanakama, because the Tanakama and Rav Yehuda both hold that asmachta is kaina. When a person offers that money for the wager, he is actually committing himself wholeheartedly. And taking that money does not entail gezel at all. What then is the concern? Due to the fact that he has no other occupation and his lack of sensitivity. So in summary, we have a Mishnah which lists for us four psulim. So mava beribis, sercha shvius are straightforward. They're iser, iser ribis, iser shvius. It's considered to be a rosh and pasul edus. when it comes to Masachei B'Kuvya, Mafrichei Yoinim, who are gamblers. So it depends. According to the conclusion of the Gemara, Lefi the Shita of Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda, Asmachta is Kana, there's no concern of Gezel. It's only when they have no other legitimate occupation, they're not Isak B'Yishuv Shalaylam, due to the lack of sensitivity, we're concerned about their false edus. Whereas according to Rabbi Tarfon, who holds Asmachta is not Kana, these fellows are involved in Gezel, Gezel's Rabbanon, and that's the reason for their psal. Hadron Allah Chalayim, says the Mishnah, Ketzad Mishtatfin B'Tchumim. How do we go about arranging an Erev Tchumim on behalf of many people? Maniach HaSachobis V'Aymer. So a person who wishes to donate the food on behalf of all the members of his city, so he places down a barrel of food, V'Aymer, and he announces, Harei Zeh L'Chol B'nei Iri. This is designated for all the residents of my city, L'Chol M'Shiyeh L'Chol B'Beis HaOvel, or L'Beis HaMishta, whoever is going to need to walk to the Beis HaOvel or to the wedding. So I'm granting it on behalf of all of them. So any resident of that city who accepted this offer while it was still daytime, before Shabbos, mutar, then he can use the Erev, which is activated on his behalf during Ben HaShemoshes. However, if he only accepts the offer after Shabbos arrives, it's too late. Asur, he can't use the Erev. Why? He can no longer make an Erev once Shabbos arrives. Om Rav Yosef, Chachamim only allowed an Erev Tchumah to be established for the sake of Mitzvah. This is meant to ensure, to preserve the Tchumah limitation. We're meant to stay within our boundaries. The Erev Tchumah really overrides it. And Chachamim only allowed that in the case of Advar Mitzvah. Says the Gemara, Mai Kamashman, what is Rav Yosef's Chiddush? Tanina. We already learned this in our Mishnah. L'chol mishayelech l'beis ha'aval or l'beis ha'mishta. It's meant for anybody going to a beis ha'aval or beis ha'mishta, which is a mitzvah. The Ritva says, aval is mentioned before mishta because of the pasuk, which says, toiv l'leches el beis ha'aval, mi l'leches el beis ha'mishta. It's preferable to go to a beis ha'aval, which inspires a person to do things correctly than to go to a wedding. In any case, the Mishnah clearly says that the purpose of the Erev is strictly for mitzvah. So what's Rav Yosef coming to add? Maldatema, perhaps I would think, Urcha de Milsa Katani. You can make an Erev for any purpose. The Mishnah is simply citing your typical example. Why then would a person embark on this journey, on this trip on Shabbos? It seems that the typical situation would involve a mitzvah, and the Mishnah is simply citing a typical example. But technically, you can do it for any purpose. Kamash Malam. That's where Rav Yosef informs us, no. It needs to be done strictly for the sake of mitzvah. The Mishnah says, V'chol shekibul olav mibayjoyim. So any of the Bnei Ha'ir who accepted this offer while it was still daylight, he can have the benefit of the Erev. Shamas mina in Breira. Perhaps we can bring a right from this Mishnah that we don't apply the concept of Breira, which means when you begin a process, we initiate a process and you only complete it at a later time. Breira would mean that you can apply that later confirmation retroactively. And now Mishnah would seem we don't say Breira. Because although this fellow heard about the Erev of Mibayim, so he contemplated perhaps using the Erev, but since he only made a decision later on, he only confirmed status after Shabbos, you can't apply that confirmation retroactively. That's what the Mishnah says, V'chol shekibul olav mibayim. It only works for a person who confirmed, who accepted the offer while it was still Friday. Apparently, Shamas mina ein breira. You can't begin the process now, complete it later, and have it applied retroactively. The yesh breira, because if you will apply breira, why does he have to accept the erev mibayim? As long as he heard about it, and he confirmed it even on Shabbos. So that confirmation on Shabbos can be applied retroactively to the time that you heard about it, which is Friday, when he had begun contemplating, perhaps, utilizing the Erev. The Yesh Breira, because if Breira applies, Tigli Misl Mafreya, you can have a retroactive indication, that he really wanted it. He really wanted to accept the Erev on Friday. So the fact that he merely heard about it on Friday should suffice. Amar Rav Ashi, Hoydi'u, V'loi Hoydi'u Katani. We're meant to learn the Mishnah differently. The Mishnah is stipulating that if he was told about it, Hoydi'u Mibaydi'aim, then that's okay. As opposed to where it was Loi Hoydi'u, they didn't inform him. He never heard about it until nighttime, in which case certainly it can't work. So perhaps we can apply greater, which would mean that as long as he heard about it, Hoydi'u, he was informed on Friday about the existence of the Erev, about the outstanding offer that this fellow offered to all the Bnei Yair. That's okay, because once he began thinking about it and contemplating perhaps using this Erev, that initiates the process, and although it was only completed on Shabbos, when he finally accepted upon himself and committed himself to the Erev, that can be applied retroactively, and he will have the Erev just as anybody else. Continues the Gemara. Omar Vasi, Katan ben Sheish, Yoitzei Be'erev Imoy. We have a minor who is up till 6 years old. He can use his mother's Erev. Even if his mother didn't designate any food specially for him, he's attached to his mother's Erev because he's totally dependent on his mother. Rashi says he's Kegufa. So it's automatic. He's automatically included in her Erev. Now when we say Ben Sheish, we don't mean 6 years old. It means within the sixth year, five and a bit. So whenever we have Ben Sheish, or the Gemara soon will discuss Ben Arba, Ben Chamesh, it all means within the fourth year, within the fifth year. Perhaps let's see Rashi inside who explains this for us. So immediately to the right, beginning with the words Yoitzi Be'erev Imoy, says Rashi, Irva Imoy La'atzma. His mother made her own independent Erev, but Le'zichsa Le'Be'erev, and didn't really grant him any portion of the Erev. What is Allah Imoy L'chasai Ima? She can take him along with her. The Kegufa Dami, because he's regarded like her guf. He's automatically included in her Erev. The Mestama Datale. The presumption is that she had him in mind, Le'sagi Le'Be'la Imoy, because he can't function without his mother. He so desperately needs his mother that the presumption is that he's going to come along with her wherever she goes. Continues the Gemara. Meisei, we have a kashma b'raisa. B'raisa says, katan shetzarach li'imoy, yoitzi be'erev imoy. A katan who is fully dependent on his mother, he can use his mother's erev. V'she'ein tzarach li'imoy. But if he's not fully dependent on his mother, he's already mature to that point that he doesn't really need his mother to that extent. Ein yoitzi be'erev imoy. He can no longer use his mother's erev. Okay, so far it's not really a kasha, because perhaps this description of tzarach li'imoy applies up until Ben Sheish, like Rav Asi. So far we have no kasha. But utnan nami gabi sukkah kai gavna. We learned likewise in a Mishnah regarding sukkah. Katan she'in tzarach li'imoy chayv b'sukkah. A katan who's mature to the point that he's no longer fully dependent on his mother, he's chayv in mitzvah sukkah. We have to be mechanechim for mitzvah sukkah. He belongs in the sukkah with his father because he is no longer tzarach li'imoy. Vavinaba, and we asked on this, ve'ezu katan she'in tzarach li'imoy. What is the state? How do you describe this stage in life? Amrid v'rabyanai, we have behavioral indication. Kol she'nifne, when he tends to his needs, ve'ein imoy mikan chasai. He doesn't need his mother to wipe him. So that indicates maturity. A child who wakes up from his sleep, and he no longer has the need to call out to his mother. So that's an indication of maturity. So up until that point, he's called Tzarach Le'imoy, and he's potter from Sukkah. From that point and on, he's no longer fully dependent on his mother, and Schayev B'Sukkah. So if the child is still calling his mother when he wakes up, that's called Tzarach Le'imoy. Says the Gemara, Ima Salkadaitach. Any child that calls his mother when he wakes up is considered to be Tzarach Le'imoy. G'daylam Nami Karu. Even older children have that habit, waking up and calling their mother right away. So, evidently, that's not a true indication. Ella Ema rather says like this. Kol Shaniyah Mishnasay. How do we know that a child has already outgrown that stage of Tzarach Le'imoy? A child who wakes up from his sleep, ve'ene kore ima ima, and he doesn't persistently call mother, mother, until she shows up. So that's an indication of maturity. So we have two behavioral indications. Number one, when he tends to his needs, and he needs his mother to wipe him, or a child who wakes up and persistently calls mother, mother, until she shows up. That's called tzarach li'imoy. Vikama, what is considered to be past the stage of Tzarech Le'imai, Kvar Arba, Kvar Chamesh, once he reaches the point of 4 or 5, again, we mean within the 4th year, within the 5th year. So, typically it's the 5th year. Rashi says if he's more advanced in his maturity, then once you get to 4th year, he's already outgrown that stage of dependency. So this is Kashan Ravasi, who tells us that the katan up until Ben Sheish is included in his mother's Erev, which indicates that up until that point, it's still considered to be Tzarech Le'imai. And this is in contrast with the Brisa here, which tells us that the Tzarech Le'imai is only up until 4 or 5. Says the Gemara, Omar Rabbi Shua Ber Darvidi. We misinterpreted Ravasi. He didn't mean to say that the katan up until 6, because it's Tzarech Le'imai, doesn't need to have his Erev at all. The mother doesn't have to designate anything for him. No, that was wrong pshat. Ravasi was referring to a case where his mother indeed designated some food for him. What happened was that his mother designated food for him, and his father as well made an Erev for the son. The question is, which one does he follow? And that's what he's speaking about. You're right. To have the halacha that the katan is totally included in his mother's Erev because he's Tzarech Le'imai and he's kegufa, etc., that's only up until 4 or 5. Ravasi was speaking where the mother made an Erev for him. She designated food for him, but so did the father. And Ravasi's chiddush is that since he prefers his mother up until Ben Sheish, he still has a strong preference to his mother. That's the Erev that becomes applied to him. Om Rav Shobar Beid Ravidi, Ki Kam Rav Asi. You know what Rav Asi is speaking about? Ki Gon Sheirev Olav Avi Letzafen V'Miludara. His father made an Erev on his behalf to the north, V'Miludara, his mother to the south. So he has two conflicting Erevs. And the Chiddush is that Filu Bar Sheish Nami, even a Bar Sheish, but Tzav Sa De'Imei Nichal, he prefers his mother's company. And therefore, halachically speaking, that Erev is applied to him. That's more meisve. We have a kashmir brisa. Katan shetzaruch le'imoy yoytzei be'erev imoy. A katan who is fully dependent on his mother, he's automatically included in his mother's erev. Ad ben sheish, until ben sheish, meaning a ben shana, ben shtayim, a 3-year-old, four, until a ben sheish. So this brisa clearly indicates that from 0 until 6, he's going to be automatically included in his mother's erev. Tiyufta der Yishua Bravidi, Tiyufta. Indeed, this is a refutation on what we just said. On Yishua Baravidi, who maintains that once you're a Bar Arba Bar Chamesh, you can no longer have this privilege of being automatically included in your mother's Erev. We have a Braisa, which clearly says that he can be included up until Ben Sheish. So this fits with the earlier explanation, earlier interpretation of Asi. Yeah, up until Ben Sheish, he's considered to be Tzarech Le'imai and is automatically included in her Erev. Says, well, if that's the case, we have another kasha. Le'ima tiyavet yufte, terev asi. Perhaps this price which says that this stage only extends up until Ben Sheish, which seems to indicate that Ben Sheish is out of the equation. Is this a kasha on Rav Asi who told us that even a katan Ben Sheish is included? Amlach Rav Asi ad va'ad bichlal. When the Braisa says ad ben sheish, it means up until and exclusive and inclusive. Even the ben sheish will be included in this halacha, which is consistent with what Rav Asi said. Says more, if that's the case, we have another kash. But this Braisa indicates that up until ben sheish and including ben sheish, he's still considered Tzarech Le'imai, which is in contrast with Rav Yana and Rish Lakish, who told us earlier regarding Sukkah, that what is considered to be Tzarech Le'imai up until 4 or 5? Leima Tavet Yufte, the Rav Yana, Rish Lakish. So which one is it? 4 or 5 or 6? Like Kasha, the answer is like this, depending on the situation. If the father is in town, then yeah, once he reaches 4 or 5, he really begins gravitating to his father and is no longer considered to be so attached to his mother and therefore not included in her Erev and is chayiv in Sukkah. However, If there's no father in town, in that case, he still clings to his mother up until the point of Ben Sheish, as reflected in this price. Loikasha, the answer is, Hadi Isse Ovui Bamasa. When his father's in town, then this stage only continues until 4 or 5. Hadi Loi Isse Ovui Bamasa, the Brisa, which applies this stage up until Ben Sheish, is referring to a case where the father's not in town, in which case he still clings to his mother up until the point of Ben Sheish. So in conclusion, we learned that a katan can automatically use his mother's Erev. It depends. If his father's in town, this halacha applies up until a ben dalad, if he's sharp, if he's mature, or up until ben hay, for your typical child. If the father's not in town, in this case, this stage of clinging will extend up until ben sheish, and even ben sheish will be included in the Erev of his mother in accordance with Rav Asi's statement. Continues the Gemara, Tana Rabbona, Ma'ariv Adam Alidei Bnoi Ubita Aktanim. A person can go ahead and establish an Erev on behalf of his young son or daughter. Now Rashi says, we're speaking about Ma'arev al Yodan Bishvilan, on their behalf, meaning he's actually designating a portion of food for their sake. Unlike in the previous Gemara, which was a katan who was utterly dependent on his mother, Tzorach Lima, in which case he doesn't have his own independent identity. He's bottled to her. He's kegufa, Rashi said. So he doesn't need his own bread. In this case, we're speaking about children who are, although still ketanim, not yet adults, but they're beyond the stage of tzarach l'imay. So they need their own portion of food, of bread for the Erev. So you can do that on their behalf. Likewise, you can make an Erev on behalf of his Eved, his Shifcha, who are ketanim, non-Jewish, bein ledaten, or bein shelo ledaten, whether or not he has their das, their consent. Because these fellows are halakhically dependent on him. They don't have their own independent identity. Therefore, he has the ability to make an Erev for their sake, whether or not they agree. Aval einam arif. But he does not have the ability to do likewise. Lo yalidei avdo yifashiv chasei ivrim. Not on behalf of the Eved and Shifcha that are ivrim, that are Jewish slaves. Velo yalidei b'no yubita gdolim. Nor on behalf of his son and daughter who are already adults. V'lo ya'idei ishtoi, nor on behalf of his wife. Elamidatam, unless he has their consent. Because these people are halakhically independent. Tani idach, we have another braisa. Lo ya'arav adam ha'idei b'no yubita gdolim. A person, the only way he can do the erev for his older son and daughter, v'idei avdoi v'shev chasei ivrim, on behalf of his servant or maidservant who are Jewish. V'lo ya'idei ishtoi, or for his wife, he can only do it only with their consent. But he has the ability to make an Erev on behalf of his Eved Shifcha Waknanim, whether or not he has their consent. Why? Says the Brayse. So the reason is because their hand is like his, meaning they're part of his domain, part of his jurisdiction, that are halakhically dependent on him. Therefore, he has the ability to make the Erev on their behalf. Continues the Braisa. V'chulan, in all these cases, where the husband, the father, the master, made the Erev on their behalf. V'chulan she'irvu, let's say they themselves made their own Erev. In addition to his Erev, the Erev aleihem rabban, and their master also made an Erev on their behalf. So which one is applied? Yoytzin b'shal rabban. They must use their master's Erev, because that overrides their Erev. Chutz min Isha, except for the Isha, because she has the ability to object, to protest. She is her own person. She has halachic independence. So in that case, she is not bound to his Erev. Says more Isha Maishna, why specifically an Isha? What about all those other cases, the adult children, etc.? Amar Rabba, Isha v'chol d'damila. We mean Isha and anything in that category. The adult children, the Eved Shifcha Ivrim, and Isha, all regarded as one and the same. They're halakhically independent, and they have the ability to object and protest their husband, father, or master's Erev. Of Mamar, so we just learned, Chutz Mnei Isha, Mnei Shichoy Limchais. So a wife is different, because she has the ability to protest. Tamad Amachi. Apparently it's because she objected. She explicitly was Meich. Hastama. But if there's no indication, one way or the other, what happens? Nafka b'debala. She'll certainly use her husband's Erev. Even though there was no explicit consent, that doesn't appear to be necessary, even when we're speaking about an Isha, etc. Says more, really? Haktani Reisha. But in the beginning of the Braisa, it said, Elamidatam. That the husband, master, or father can only make it on behalf of these independent people if he has their consent. My love, the Amriyin, apparently was speaking where they explicitly expressed their haskama, their consent. Says Malai, no. My Elamidatam, the Ishtiku. What does the Braisa mean when it says you can only do it on their behalf if they have das, if they consented? The Ishtiku. Where they remained silent, meaning they heard about it, and they were quiet. As long as they didn't protest, remaining silent is okay. That indicates acceptance. Lafuki hecha de amri loy, as opposed to where they explicitly protested and objected. So, when we speak about the halakhically dependent people, the young son and daughter, the eved shivcha knanim, in that case, we don't need anything. Even if it's shaloi midatim, against their will, he has the ability to enforce his erev upon them. When it comes to the individuals who are halakhically independent, then although you don't need to have explicit consent, but at least implicit consent you need to have, meaning they heard about the erev and they remained silent, which indicated acceptance. However, in the case where they objected, then certainly they can do things on their own. So lafuki hecha d'amri loy, as opposed to a case where they objected. Says the Gemara, really? Ha, v'chulon she'irvu, v'irv alein rabon, yoitz mishol rabon. This tamahu, the Braisa says, all these individuals who made their own erev, in addition to the erev that their master established for them, where is the halacha there? Yoitz mishol rabon. They need to specifically use their master's erev. We're speaking about those dependent individuals. Now, here it's a case of this tamahu. There was no indication one way or the other. Uktani chutz min eisha, meaning they didn't object, right? They didn't protest. They just made their own erev. And the Braisa draws that line in the case where they made their own erev, although they didn't protest. They just made their own erev. We draw that line between people who are dependent, in which case they're bound to their master's Erev, as opposed to the Isha, Uktani Chutz Min Isha, as opposed to the Isha and the other independent individuals, who don't have to follow their master's Erev. They're not bound to his Erev. They're Loi Nafki. They don't use their master's Erev. Now, there was no protest. There was no objection. They didn't voice protest, so why is it that the Isha is not bound to her husband's Erev? Meaning, which concluded that you don't need to have explicit acceptance. You don't have to have haskama verbally. As long as there was implicit consent, as long as they didn't object or protest, then they're automatically included, even a wife, an adult child. So why is the Braisa here tell us that in the case where the Isha made her own Erev, she'll use her own Erev, even though we're speaking where she didn't protest her husband's Erev? Why isn't she automatically included in her husband's Erev? Amarava, kivan she'irvu, once they made their own Erev, have you a greater protest than that? Ein lecha michoi gadol mazeh, there's no greater objection than that. They went ahead and independently established their own Erev. What does that indicate? They have no interest in their husband's Erev, or their master, or their father. So, of course, automatically, when there's nothing implicit, when there's no objection, the assumption is, the mindset is, that they're included in their husband's Erev or their master or the father, even when we're speaking about independent people. But where there's an objection, or where they went ahead and they made their own independent Erev, that is tantamount to objection. In that case, they're no longer bound by this fellow's Erev. So in conclusion, we have two categories of individuals. We have dependents, like a young son and daughter, Eved v'shivcha v'aknanim. In that case, a person can make an Erev on their behalf, with or without their consent. We have individuals who are considered to be halakhically independent, like an adult son or daughter, like an Eved v'shivcha who are Ivrim, or like his wife. In that case, he needs consent. So if it's a shloi midatan, he can't do it. but if there was merely implicit consent. So they heard about the Erev and they remained silent. That's sufficient. If they objected, or certainly if they went ahead and made their own independent Erev, there's no greater objection than that, and certainly they won't be bound by his Erev. Continues the Mishnah, Kama hu shiurei. So what exactly is the sheer requirement of food for the Erev Tchumen? Mazon shtei sudeis l'chol echad ve'echad. Food which is equivalent to 2 meals worth per person. So we calculate the meal size based on each person individually. It's your personal average meal size that determines the size of your Erev, generally speaking. Unless we have somebody who's an overeater, we learned that earlier, then he'll go follow the average meal size, not necessarily his meal size. So we go with the kula on that. But generally speaking, it's personal. So which meal are we speaking? Weekday or Shabbos? Says the Mishnah, Mezoine l'choyv l'Shabbos. He calculates based on the size of a weekday meal, not a Shabbos meal, David Meir. Rabbi Yehuda says just the opposite. L'Shabbos v'l'choyv. He calculates based on the size of a Shabbos meal rather than a weekday meal. And they're both, Rav Meir and Yehuda, aiming to be lenient. Let's see Rashi. It's right in the middle of the Amid. Beginning with the word Masnissen. They're both being Meskavim Lahokel. Says Rashi like this. Rav Meir Savar, Meir figures, B'Shabbos Ochel Inish Tvei. A person will eat more. Why? Mishum Debasim Tavshile. Because the food is more tasty, more appetizing. V'am inshi, there's a common phrase. There's always room for good food. There's room for dessert. So his meals will be larger in size. Therefore, Rav Meir says, let's not follow the Shabbos meal. Rather, let's determine by weekday meal. Rabbi the Savar, given the Shabbos, soyed the Shalosh Sudeis, being that on Shabbos, he eats 3 meals in close proximity. Eino eich l'harbi b'chal suda. As a result, doesn't eat that much per Suda, so we prefer focusing and calculating based on the Shabbos meal. Rabbi Chanan says, due to the abundance of basar v'dagim, he's going to eat less bread. Rabbi Yenison says, due to the fact that a person increases anik Shabbos and snacks, so his meals are generally going to be smaller in size. So that's Bishan Rabbi Yehuda. Now, just one point here, when we speak about mazon shtei sudeis, the amount of food required for 2 meals. So it depends. If we're speaking about bread, then it's how much bread you're going to eat in 2 meals. If we're speaking about other types of foods which are accompaniments to bread, let's say relish or anything else, which is not the actual bread, then it's based on a calculation of how much of that food will be eaten throughout the 2 meals. Okay, so that's the shear of shtei sudeis. So again, according to Rav Meir, it's based on the size of a weekday meal. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, based on the size of a Shabbos meal, we assume he's going to eat less bread because of the abundance of other foods, Rabbi Chanan says. So when he measures his bread, he calculates the bread which he eats during a meal on Shabbos, going to be a small amount of bread. So we have Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda who are working with an estimate. And we have another two shittas in the Mishnah who provides with a precise amount of volume needed for the 2 sudeis of Erev Tchumen. Rabbi Yechon Breuker and Rabbi Shimon. Says the Mishnah, Rabbi Yechon Breuker Aymer, what is considered to be 2 sudeis worth? He's speaking about bread. So he says like this, Mikika Repunyan, a loaf of bread which is purchased with a punjain. A punjain is 1/48 of a seller. Each seller has 4 dinar, each dinar 4 ma'is, each ma' 2 punjain. So seller equals 48 punjain. So we know the value of the loaf. We don't know what size loaf it is. We don't know how much the flour costs. So that's the second part of the statement. Midalid sin besela. When 4 sa'ah of flour goes for a seller. How much is 4 sa'ah? 24 kav. Each sa'ah is 6 kav. So basically the equation is like this. When we have 24 kav per sela, then the loaf of bread which will be purchased using a pundyain is the loaf of bread which conforms to the size of the shtei sudas needed for the erev tchumen. So how much is it? It's half a kav. Because if 48 pundyain purchases 24 kav, it's a half a kav per pundyain. And apparently that's the size of the loaf of bread. Loaf of bread purchased with the pundyain will be a half a kav. That contains two sudas. So it's basically four sudas per kav. The Gemara soon will change that actually. At this point, we assume we're speaking about a loaf of bread, which is a half a kav in size, and that contains two sudas. Reb Shimon Omer, it's a bit different. Shtei yodes lekikar. What's considered to be two sudas worth of bread? Shtei yodes lekikar, meaning two-thirds of a loaf. How large a loaf are we speaking? Mishalosh lekav. When you took a kav and formed it into three loaves, each loaf being a third of a kav, two-thirds of that loaf contains two sudas. So two-thirds of a third of a kav is basically two-ninths. So according to him, each suda is a ninth of a kav, and the kav contains nine sudas. Says the Mishnah, Chetzio lebeis hamenuga. Half of the above-mentioned loaf will be the shear for the house that has a nega. Rashi explains, if a person is present inside a house that has a nega, for a prescribed amount of time, the amount of time that it takes to have a meal, which is exactly half of this loaf, which contains two meals. So if he remains there for that amount of time, for that length of time, his begadim become tummy. That's a shear of suda. And Rashi actually points out that here is the source of the concept of kedei achilas pras. Find all over kedei achilas pras, kezayis of matzah, Pesach night has to be eaten within the time frame of achilas pras. 4 minutes, 9 minutes. What is achilas pras? Pras means a half. Half of what? Of this loaf. The loaf that has two sudas, which is used for the Erev. So a half of this loaf is a shear of one suda. So when a person eats a kezayis of matzah within the time frame of achilas pras, within the time that it takes to experience a meal, then it's considered to be one mas achilah, one act of eating. It's mitzarev because it was done within one mealtime experience, and therefore it's considered to be a proper achilah of kezayis matzah. So this is the source of the halacha of kedei achilas pras. So when it comes to the halacha of a bayis that is a nega, likewise this halacha applies. If he remains there for the amount of time that it takes to eat a half of this loaf, which is a shir suda, that's long enough to make his begadim tummy. Now Rashi actually points out that this will be applied even to Reb Shimon, who just told us that two-thirds of the loaf contain two sudas, which indicates that a half a loaf is actually a bit more than a suda. So how does it work with the Mishnah, which says a half a loaf is a suda? He says by Erevin, he goes lekula. When it comes to the Din Torah, he's machmer that a suda is a half a loaf. Although when it comes to Erevin, he says even less of that is considered to be a suda, meaning even a third of the loaf is considered to be a suda. So this halacha applies even to Reb Shimon. Concludes the Mishnah, v'chetzi chetzio lifsel sagvia. Half of a half, meaning a quarter of that loaf, is the shear which will be poisel the gviya, the guf of a person. This is a dinder rabbanan. Rashi says if a person eats oichel, which is tame, at this amount, the shear of a quarter of this loaf, then his body becomes poisel. He no longer can eat truma. So again, regarding the shear of truman, a rabbit truman, you need to have a mazon shtei sudais, according to Rameir Rabbi Yudah. It's an estimate, an average size meal. According to Rabbi Yechon Brek and Rabbi Shimon, they provide absolute precise meal sizes. Continues the Gemara. V'kama mazon shtei sudas. Getting back to Rameir Yehuda, who allowed us to calculate, to estimate based on our own meal size. Let's say a person just wants to follow the average. So what is considered to be the proper amount of food, speaking specifically about bread perhaps, that is considered to be a mazon shtei sudos? Amar Yehuda, Amar Rav, tarti rifta ikre yosa. Two loaves of bread which are taken by the farmers out to the farm, that's considered to be those two loaves equal two meals. Rav Bar Ava Amar, tarti rifta, two loaves of bread, Nahar Papisa, of this place called Nahar Papisa. Omer Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef bred the Rav. So Rav Yosef turned to Rav Yosef, the son of Rav, and he asked him, Avuch Kaman Svirle, whose shita does he follow? Ramei or Rabbi Yehuda? So he says, Ramei Svirle. He holds like Ramei, that we estimate based on a weekday meal, which is meant to be smaller than a Shabbos meal. So Rabbi Yosef told him, Ano Nami, Kuramei Svirle. I myself also hold like Ramei. Why? Dikra Rabbi Yehuda. Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, who maintains that a Shabbos meal is actually smaller, we have a bit of a difficulty here. Why? Kasha, hadama inshi. We're going to have a kasha from the common phrase, which is ravcha lebesim eshchiach. A person always has room for good food. So apparently on Shabbos, when the food is more tasty and appetizing, a person will actually eat larger size meals, and therefore a mayor's approach seems to be more plausible. Continues the Gemara. So Rabbi Yechon Broike and Rabbi Shimon gave us precise amounts. According to Rabbi Yechon Broike, it was the kikar purchased with a punyon, and that kikar contains an amount of two sudos. According to Rabbi Shimon, it's two-thirds of that loaf, with each loaf being a third of a kaf. So the Gemara, Rabbi Yechon Broike, Eimer, Tana, we learned in Brice, Ukroivim Devreim Liyeshavim. Both their views seem to be very close to each other. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon. Says to him, really? Me, dummy, how can you compare? According to Rabbi Yochanan ben Breika, how many sudas can fit into a kaf? Let's calculate. He spoke about a kikar, which contains two meals, which is suitable for the Erev Truman, being purchased with a pundyon, being a 48th of a sela, when the sela is the value of 24 kaf, giving each pudyon a half a kaf. So this loaf has how much? A half a kaf, and it only contains two meals, leaving us with four meals per kaf. Whereas Rabbi Shimon tells us that there are nine meals per kaf, because he says the two meals are contained within two-thirds of a loaf of bread, with each loaf being a third of a kaf. So each meal is really a ninth of a kaf, leaving nine meals contained in the entire kav. In contrast to Rabbi Yochanan Breike, who says only four meals in the kav, very far apart. Says the Gemara, me dummy, how can it compare? To Rabbi Yochanan, arba sudasa lekava. Kod Rabbi Yochanan, only four meals in the kav. To Rabbi Shimon, teisha sudasa lekava. Kod Rabbi Shimon, there are nine meals in the kav. Very wide margin between the two shittas. Says the Omar of Chizda. Chizda says like this, you're mistaken. When Rabbi Yochanan said that the loaf has two meals, and that loaf is purchased with a punyan, he didn't mean that's the purchase price for the customer. He meant that's the value, the wholesale value of the flour for the baker who purchases the flour. So the baker purchases his purchase price, his wholesale price, is a punyan per half a cup. But when he sells it to his customer, takes off a cut, he takes off a commission, a third. He deducts a third of the flour. So how much does the customer get for his punyan? Take that half a kav and deduct a third, leaves him only with a third of a kav. So in a third of a kav, you have two sudas. Omer Rav Chizda, same man, you have to deduct from that amount, shlish lechaveni, a third for the chaveni, for the merchant, for the grocer, the baker. So the loaf of bread, which contains two sudas, actually only ends up having a third of a kav. So how many sudas in a kav? Well, if a third of a kav has two sudas, so a kav has six. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, a kav has six, and according to Rabbi Shimon, has nine. Says, well, it's still too far apart. Vakati, and still, lemar tisha, according to Rabbi Shimon, it's nine meals per kav. Well, lemar shis, according to Rabbi Yochanan, it's only six meals per kav. How can you say their shitas are close to one another? Ella, rather, ki'idach Rav Chizda. We must follow the other statement of Chizda. The Amar said, same hand mechtzel chemini. You have to deduct a half of the flour for the chemini. That's his cut. So now, the loaf of bread, which contains two sudas, purchased with a punyan, instead of having a half a kav, as in our original calculation, you have to deduct half. It only has a quarter of a kav. A quarter of a kav is two sudas. So how many sudas in a kav? Eight. So according to Rabbi Yechonon, it's eight sudas per kav. And conscious Reb Shimon holds it's nine sudas per kav. So they're close enough. So I don't know about kati, but still, Lamar Tesha. According to Reb Shimon, it's nine sudas per kav. Lamar Tami. According to Rabbi Yechonon, it's eight. Still a gap. That's what the Brisa meant. Kroivim. Devrayim Liyeshavim. Their words are close enough to each other. There's a slight discrepancy between two shittas. But there's still one more thing left to resolve. We seem to have a contradiction between two Rav Chizdas. Kasher Rav Chizda, other Rav Chizda. Because the first Rav Chizda said, he takes a third commission. Second Rav Chizda says, he takes a half commission. So it's about depending on the situation. Like Kasher, the answer is, Hodekayav Balabai Tzivi. When the customer supplies the firewood, then the Chenveni only deducts a third. Hodekayav Balabai Tzivi. The second Rav Chizda was speaking where the customer was not supplying firewood, in which case the baker deducts half for his commission. So in summation, when it comes to reckoning the mazon of shtei sudos, according to our mayor, we follow the weekday meal. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's based on the size of a Shabbos meal. According to Rabbi Yechonon Breika, it's actually a kikar, which contains two sudos. That kikar, which is purchased using a punyon, which ends up being a quarter of a kav. According to Rabbi Shimon, it's actually two-thirds of that loaf. The loaf, which is a third of a kav, so two-thirds of that loaf is actually two-ninths of a kav. So according to Rechem Breuker, a kav contains 8 meals, according to Reb Shimon, 9 meals. Indeed, their views are very close to one another. Okay, time for a brief chazara of today's daf. We began with a list of individuals who are pasul eidus. We have two categories, people who engage in avera, malve beribis, secher shvius, due to the fact that they're engaged in isser, they're considered to be Rasha and disqualified from offering Eidus. We have people who are Mesachik Bekuvia and Frichayonim, engaged in gambling. So we have two approaches to this halacha. According to the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda, who is simply coming to be a Mefarish Tanakhama because he uses the word Emosai, they hold that there's no concern of Gezel because Asmachta Kanya, the fact that he offered this money, even if it was with the mindset that he's going to win, nevertheless, the person who receives the money is not doing Gezel. The concern is only when these people are not engaged in just legitimate jobs. They're not isek b'yishuv shel olam. So they're lacking sensitivity and they're inclined to accept bribes to offer false edus even at another person's expense. And that is the source and reason of their psul. According to Reb Tafen Shita, gambling involves gezel with the rabbana because asmachta likani. When a person offers money with that mindset that perhaps he's going to win, he really doesn't want to give that money away. So taking that money entails gezel with the rabbana. And that is the reason why gamblers are postulates. The Mishnah began by describing a rivetchumen, where a person offers his own food on behalf of all the members of the city for one who is going to var mitzvah, because that's the prerequisite for the establishment of an eruv. So whoever accepted the offer, or at least perhaps knew about it, he will have the benefit of the eruv. Rav Asi told us that a katan is yoytz be'eruv imoy. So Katan, who is early dependent on his mother, can use his mother's Erev. She doesn't even have to designate food for him. It's just automatic. Up until what age? The Gemara concluded, depends. If his father's around, then it's up until Ben Dalid, if he's mature, or up until Ben Hay. If his father's not around, this halacha applies up until Ben Shisha. We learned likewise that a person can designate and establish an Erev on behalf of other people. We have two categories. Young son and daughter, or Eved and Shifcha that are Knanim, who are halakhically considered to be dependent upon this individual, so he has a right to make an Erev on their behalf, even without their consent, even if they protest and object, they are bound to his Erev. Whereas if we're speaking about an adult son or daughter, or Eved and Shifcha who are Ivrim, are Jewish, or is Ishtai, in this case he needs consent. So Shleim Edatim doesn't work. However, if they merely heard about it, and they remained silent, which indicated implicit consent, that's enough. However, if they objected, or certainly if they went ahead and they established their own Erev, there's no greater objection than that, and they're not bound to his Erev. We concluded the Mishnah told us that the sheer food requirement for the Erev Truman is a mazon of shtei sudais per person. We have four shitais to describe mazon shtei sudais.